This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security. The first 40 Big O listeners right now, dial 1-800-ALARM-ME. We'll get this limited time offer, a free doorbell camera that connects directly to your smartphone with installation of your Sloman's Shield. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
All right, here we go. Inside the Paint, Ira Winderman, Clay Ferraro along for the ride with you guys. And that's how you start up a series, Ira. That was a lot of fun last night. And I know you were out there. I was actually on Panthers duty at FLA Live Arena, but I had the game up on the tablet and I was watching it the whole time. And, you know, we'll break down the game in its totality as the show goes on, and we'll look ahead to the next game. But I want to start with the obvious, Jimmy Butler. And, you know, I think what I like about these sorts of things is I think people start to get a greater appreciation of him when he does the things that they think are important for a superstar to do, like scoring points and taking over. But when you put him next to the guys who have played for this franchise over the years, and you know, I'm not going to ask you to rank them unless you want to. I mean, if you want to take on that task and put him ahead of Dwayne Wade and LeBron James so that the aggregators can take control of that and run with it. But what he's able to do, especially in big moments, in big games, where does that compare to what you've seen over the years here?
Yeah, he's Jimmy Butler last night and these playoffs has moved himself into the pantheon. And it was funny because I was driving home, I was talking to Dave Hyde, as you know, Clay, with what's going on. First, you talk to your people, you know, at your office. What are we leading with? You got the Panthers, you got the Heat. What are you writing about? What direction are we going to go? Crazy times down here. And of course, the Dolphins figured, why not have a mini camp at the same time? We have all that going on. But I was talking to Dave, and the point I made to him as I was walking out of the parking lot, which I guess was this morning by then, is I said, Jimmy's jersey is going to the rafters. Jimmy's jersey is going to be up there. Number 22 will be next to his friend number 3 and alongside eventually number 6. Jimmy has locked that in. I know it's only been 3 seasons, Clay. I know you need an enduring time with the team. We know he also has that 4-year extension, so there'll be time. But what he has done for this team to revitalize it, I guess the way you could say it, it's been sort of remarkable. I never thought of Jimmy Butler in these terms. And I've talked to people in his camp. I've spoken to his agent. I said, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not automatically say top 15 player. Let's not automatically say top 10 player. Let's certainly not go to top 5 player with Embiid and Jokic and Giannis. And yet in this postseason, that's what he's been, Clay. He's been everything that every Heat player in a postseason has been. He was Dwayne Wade in that first playoff series against I think they were the Hornets still back then in New Orleans, and what he did. And certainly Dwayne in the 2006 NBA playoffs and finals, maybe not to that degree yet, but getting there. But yeah, what Jimmy Butler has done has been, in Heat terms, pretty much epic this postseason. I did not see this in Jimmy Butler. If you were to tell me, Ira, the Heat are going to need a couple of 40 burgers from Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, I tell you, Clay Ferraro, I like who Jimmy is. He's not a 40-point guy. That's not in his scoring vernacular. I was wrong.
He was impressive. He was impressive. And you know, what I like about it is nothing that he ever does is forced. And I think that there is this – wait, no, let me take that back. I think sometimes he can force – not shooting. Sometimes he can force things when it looks like he should be, especially in the regular season.
Or force 3-pointers at some times. I think those are the two areas when you mentioned force, that's where I went to immediately.
Yeah, well, and that's something where we haven't seen yet in these playoffs Jimmy Butler have the ball in a one-possession game late. True. Like possession for possession. And that was my one concern heading into the series. And again, we're going to break down the whole series in a little bit where, you know, if you get possession for possession with Jason Tatum, you've been able to see what he can do in those moments. And Jimmy Butler did it in those moments in the playoff ride in the bubble. And yet in the regular season, sometimes he settles. So we'll run over that bridge when we come to it. But what I've been really impressed with him, Ira, is that I think we all know that he's got this stubbornness about him, and stubborn maybe putting it mildly. And sometimes he wants to defer just for the sake of proving that he's right, that he should be deferring. But in these last few playoff series, the defense has dictated that other teams are more concerned about Jimmy Butler passing and getting his teammates to go off than they are about him. So, now, it doesn't mean they want him to go out there and score 40, but what they are taking away is what they know he typically wants to do, which is make the right pass and set up a teammate. They basically said, we don't think you can go out there and score 40 and beat us. And he's proven them wrong over and over again. And to me, Ira, I just think that for him to be able to sense that and take over, I've been blown away.
You know, I always do this sort of meter here, and I have these two endpoints, Clay. I have, you can be a Michael or you can be a Magic. A Michael wants to get all the points, wants to get every point. Every game a Michael goes out there, it's a 50, let's say a 40-point possibility. A Magic wants to fill the box score, sometimes at the cost of getting points on the board. I think at times that Jimmy has wanted to be a Magic a little bit more. Get the rebounds, get the assists, get the steals, get the blocks, get everything across the board. I think this Heat team has required him to be a Michael a little bit more. More of a Jordan than a Johnson. And I think that's what you're seeing. The great ones do that, Clay, in any sport. They take measure of the moment and they see what's necessary. You were a child. You were in diapers then when Magic played center against the 76ers and had his moment there when they had their injuries. But that's what these guys do, is they can morph into the moment. We've seen that throughout these playoffs. Jimmy Butler has morphed into the moment from defensive pest to offensive impresario and everything in between. The guy is, I know this gets thrown around a little too much, but at least what I've seen, Clay, I'll put it this way, in the last month, he's a basketball savant. He is reading the moment. He is letting you know, hey, I see this, so I'm doing this. And we've seen this throughout the playoffs. And Clay, not to be too typically long-winded here, is that's what you have to do in the playoffs. Each situation is so unique, you have to read the moment. He's been very, very good at reading the moments.
So as the show goes on, we want to take your questions, your comments over what we saw in game one and what we're hoping to see in the next few games as this series rolls on. That third quarter last night, we'll get a little bit more into that. What I found really impressive about it was the first half, Ira, it felt like, and the Heat kind of hinted at this, even though they wouldn't say it directly, they were caught off guard by the Celtics' physicality. And it felt like I'm watching the game, and you were there in person, whereas I was watching it with it. But I felt like even watching it on TV, I was like, these guys are bigger, they're faster, they're hitting their spots quicker, both offensively and defensively. They're throwing Miami out. The first half, really, Ira, was kind of an uh-oh. And yes. I thought the Heat were really fortunate to be down only 8, and we'll talk about the reasons why in a minute. But something changed at halftime. And I thought it was interesting that all the players said,
oh, hell yeah.
Spo didn't tell us anything. Spo kind of let the door closed and let the players talk. And Gabe Vincent said something. He said, I think all 17 people, each one of them said something at some point. So I'm saying all this because whatever happened at halftime, there was an avalanche in that third quarter. And, you know, there used to be a term that Heat fans would have for the third quarter. And by used to, I mean like a week ago. but it wasn't that way last night. So when you're there and you're watching that third quarter, when did you sense that things were going to be different? And what did you see in that third quarter that really changed things?
I sensed it from as soon as the clock started in the third quarter. And you could see it in their actions and everything. And my takeaway of that 22-2 run was this. And this sort of changed my thoughts again about everything in the postseason. When the Miami Heat are at their best, they are as good as anyone. Now, Clay, there are times of doubts, and we've seen it. The two losses in Philadelphia, the loss in Atlanta in game 3. When you do question and you say to yourself, come on, the Warriors are so much better. The Suns are so much better. The Celtics are better. You do have those moments. But the formula they can bottle, that the Miami Heat at their best. Matter of fact, I would put it this way, Clay, because I think this is how I often look at teams. I say to myself, when team A, B, and C are at their best, who's the better team? I'm not so sure there's a better NBA team than when the Miami Heat are at their best. For this reason, the Miami Heat's two-way play and the Miami Heat's ensemble play. So you're getting it on both ends, as we saw at the start of the third quarter, and you're getting it from everyone. Look at that stretch they had. Max Strus, a three, finally, when no one could hit his three. Gabe Vincent, two threes when they needed threes because the three-point shooting was craptastic in the first half. Check that box. You have Bam Adebayo, who had absolutely no statistics worthy of noting, but who was smothering on defense. Matter of fact, Bam Adebayo spent more time on the floor than upright last night. Wouldn't you agree with that, even on your iPad? I mean,
certainly.
I think the guy forced like 37 jump balls. It was always a tie-up with him. And then at the start of the third quarter, even before that, we were all looking at halftime. We were looking at the warm-ups. Oh, PJ Tucker's out there. I always look, Clay, at the start of a half to see if there's a lineup change. In other words, so I go through the five starters and I say, okay, there's Jimmy, there's Gabe, there's Max, there's Bam, and there's PJ. And I just wrote about this at SunCentral.com. And he basically told Eric Spoelstra, there is no effing way I am not going to be out there for the start of the second half. And he said a genie took care of him at halftime. Now, I don't know if the genie came on the end of a syringe or something like that. That's not for me to say. Or some oral miracle, again, you know, or maybe some vaping. They don't test for certain things. But he was out there at the start of the second half. That told me plenty. P.J. Tucker, that son of a bitch, and what he does. Remember this, Clay? You remember. We did our show last week. Matter of fact, interesting timing. Remember how Joel Embiid said, we need a P.J. Tucker? We need someone like that. He basically called all of his teammates soft because they weren't P.J. Tucker. So honestly, when you're asking Ira Winderman, third person, what he was thinking when the second half started, it was, wow, P.J.'s out there. And if P.J.'s out there, it tells you all you need to know about the guts and grit and guile of this team. And then they just took off. Again, the Miami Heat at their best are as good as anyone in the 2021-2022 NBA.
There you go. There you go. Aggregators take that. I think with what we saw in the third quarter last night, and you know, at some point we'll talk about what's going on around the rest of the league. And I agree. And I've watched the rest of these playoffs, and obviously Golden State, when they're at their best, they're impressive. And yet there's not a team that can match what the Heat do on both ends of the floor. And with one kind of causing the other, so to speak, like one leading to the other, where when their defense, I mean, they're swarming, it's crazy. And so that avalanche in the third quarter, it was everything that Miami Heat basketball is all about. It was defense leading to offense on the other end of the floor. It was the three-point shooting finally going down. It was Jimmy Butler, once there was a little bit of pushback, he had a couple of steals right there at midcourt. I mean, those are the types of things. There aren't a lot of superstars that are out there doing what Jimmy Butler did with those two steals at half. Even though Eric Spoelstra may not want him to do that, as he said after the game. But that's the Miami Heat. That's what he does. And, you know, kind of put a capper on the Jimmy Butler discussion really quickly. We have to see how the rest of this plays out. And we have to see if they're able to go on and win a championship. And yet, I've always been a firm believer that what you do in the playoffs has to matter a lot more than what you do in the regular season. Absolutely. Even though we give the awards for regular season, you know, and to the point where I'll do it to a fault, where I am going to die on the hill that I think Robert Horry should be a Hall of Famer. Like, just the things that he did in the playoffs in big moments, they have to mean more. So if Jimmy Butler is able to do this in two postseasons and get a ring, he has to get a ring. Yes. But I think it's the pantheon that he then enters, to me, is a new level where you're starting to think of him as one of the top five players in this generation's game, because you can then look back at the things that he does during the regular season and say, okay, we didn't fully appreciate that in the regular season because they don't show up in the box score, which is what we use to measure how good a player is for the MVP award in the regular season. But then when you see it impact winning in the postseason, you see him doing the other stuff that then does show up in the box. It's like, okay, all right, we know now that he can do that stuff. We know now that when he says he wasn't doing that stuff in the regular season, it's because he didn't think that it was the most important thing for this team to grow and win a title. So all of that is what you saw in that third quarter avalanche. And it's the reason why this team moving forward is terrifying for the rest of the NBA.
And just one thing before we head to our first break here, and that is this. But let's also have perspective. Yes, the Heat didn't have Kyle Lowry, but the Celtics didn't have Al Horford and Marcus Smart.
Of course.
Marcus Smart, whether you agree he should have been Defensive Player of the Year, whether you thought Bam should have got it, whether you thought Mikal Bridges should have got it, whatever, we all agree, well, all, there's two of us, this you over there and there's me over here. We both agree he's a really good defender, right, Clay?
Yep. Yep. And a lot better was out than Pritchard.
Yeah. Even Bam might not, but we do. If Marcus Smart was out there, it probably would have, probably certainly would have been tougher on Jimmy Butler. So for as much as you can enjoy the third quarter, for as much as you can enjoy Jimmy Butler's 41, if Marcus Smart can get back from that midfoot sprain, that's going to change a lot. So again, remember Eric Spoelstra told us this in the previous two series. Series take on different lives of their own as they go along. The Boston Celtics without Marcus Smart and Al Horford are not championship level. Just like the Heat wouldn't necessarily be without, say, P.J. Tucker and Kyle Lowry for an extended period. So let's pull back a little. The Horford thing is weird. Usually NBA protocols are 5 days after day zero when you test positive. But Ime Udoka, the Celtics coach, said, not so quickly there. You know, almost in his best Lee Corso. You know, not so quickly, my friend, that Al Horford might be back for game two. We have to wait. We have to see about Marcus Smart. He was moving pretty good as player coach on the bench yesterday. We have to see about that. So I think game one had its own script. But I think when the Celtics are whole, there'll be a different script whenever that time comes.
Certainly. And I think the flip side of that is that the Heat won't be caught off guard in the first half like they were in game one. And so there are so many things that are going to change. And I think your point pointing back to what Spo said about the series taking on different iterations, different lifespans is a good one in that you're going to have to flush this one, put it to bed, because you can imagine that Boston's going to come up with something different to slow down the Heat next series. But I also think that there are a few things that we started to see last night that I think could play out in the Heat's favor as the series goes on. We'll talk about that. Plus, the guy who is not getting enough love this morning. That's next here on Inside the Paint. Welcome back. Segment two here on Inside the Paint. Looking at some of the comments here. Emilio Hernandez says, P.J. Tucker is today's Udonis Haslam. I like that.
You know what? I actually, when I was writing that story just now for Sun Sentinel and SunSentinel.com, I almost took that angle of sort of that pantheon. And again, Clay, you were in diapers back at this time, but starting with Grant Long, 34 years.
Oh, come on. I'm not that young.
But starting with Grant Long.
I was in diapers for the Magic Johnson playing all five positions, jumping center game.
Against the Sixers, right. So when you go back to Grant Long and back in his days and what Udonis Haslam did, and P.J. Brown is another name from that initial Pat Riley era, that's what the Heat have always had. And that's what makes the Heat style work, because that's who they are. They are a team that needs to have glue guys to let other guys be themselves. When you think about it, the Heat in this series, with a very good defense, has a lot of, how do I phrase this? Not very good defenders out there at times. When you have Tyler Hero out there, God bless him, Max Strus, things like that. But a glue guy can help make up for that. It's almost like when P.J. Tucker is out there, when Max is out there or Tyler's there, he has an eye in a second place. He has the confidence, I can, as Bam would say, cover my cover, but also help out a teammate. You know, what's the thing of the great defenders you always hear about being in two places at one time? How you hear of a great quarterback keeping an eye on his receiver, but also reading the quarterback's eyes. That's what P.J. Tucker is. P.J. Tucker makes the other players better. And you know what, Clay? We're going to wind up in the same situation we were 2 years ago. Jay Crowder had way too good of an offer from the Suns. The Heat were trying to save cap space, thinking they might get Giannis at the time. They let him go. P.J. Tucker has a player option after this year. I don't care if he's 37. I don't care if he's 47 or 57 with the way he plays. You got a 6'5" guy who has almost no athleticism left, but he finds a way. He's a special, special player. I love what Jimmy Butler said last night and what Eric Spoelstra said. He is the heartbeat of their team.
Yeah, and Jimmy Butler, for you guys who missed, he said, I never thought I could fall in love with a basketball player the way I've fallen in love with P.J. Tucker. And I'm
going to interrupt for a second. I almost expected for P.J. to go up like after figure skating with the bouquet of flowers that he got from Jimmy after the game.
And look, I you know, peeling back the curtain, I love watching P.J. Tucker. I love watching his post-game news conferences, the post-game Zooms. He's got the rings on, and you can hear – I know you're in the room, so I don't know that you can hear it unless you watch it back, but you can hear the rings cracking together on the microphone. And it's like if somebody asks him a question that he doesn't like or pushes it just a little too far, then you get something like the GD comment that he said. Then you get something like when they were asking him what adjustments they were going to make. in the Philly series. Like, what, you want me to just tell you what we're going to do? So I just think he's perfect. And yeah, hopefully they win a championship and this is a bad problem or a good problem to have where yes. you're trying to figure out. It's been fun to watch and see how quickly he has become a part of Heat culture and in many ways, vice versa, right? That he's kind of taken over that role. The guy that I don't think is getting enough love from last night, he's gotten some love, but they don't win the game last night if Tyler Hero doesn't do what he did in the first half. And what I thought, Ira, watching that game was when Boston's physicality was causing Miami a lot of problems early. And maybe it was rust. Maybe it was just that adjustment period. Whatever it was, they needed someone. They needed something. And Tyler Hero goes out there. And look, it's not the 30-point performance that maybe he had in the bubble against them. But they're not down by just 8 points at halftime if he doesn't come out and do it. Ira, there was a point when it felt like Boston may blow them out of the gym in that first half. And when you finally, when you got somebody out there that was like, all right, I'm going to keep you guys afloat. I'm going to find a way to make this happen offensively. And sensing kind of that moment, we've seen it from Tyler Hero in the past, not necessarily in these playoffs, but we've seen it in the past when nothing else is working for the Heat, he kind of goes out there and finds a way. Ira, I think Jimmy Butler was obviously the biggest story from last night, and with good reason. I love that finally you got the Tyler Hero in these playoffs where he's doing what the Heat need him to do the most, which is kind of taking them out of the mud and getting some points when nobody else was able to.
Yeah, you know, and what Tyler Hero did, and I asked him, I requested him postgame for that reason, because I do believe that he was the guy who kept them afloat in the first half, and that's what he can do. And he's also smart enough to get the hell out of the way when Jimmy has it going in the second half. So if you watch, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the postgame. Basically, I asked both of Tyler's arms that question when he showed up in his sleeveless deal and sort of enjoyed the moment. Yeah, and that's what you need. You know what's interesting, Clay? For as good a team as the Heat have been, number one seed in the East, up 1-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals, chance to go to the NBA Finals. Matter of fact, I'm going to throw this back at you. To me, I only see the Heat with two shot creators, which is remarkable to have gotten this far. We know Jimmy's a shot creator because he's a free throw creator. We know Tyler Hero is a shot creator because he's Boy Wonder and he creates his own space. Usually teams have multiple numbers of guys like that. But let's look at the starting lineup. You know, you and I have spoken about this for weeks. Bam Adebayo is not a shot creator. He's not going to be a 30-point guy unless it's off lobs and offensive rebounds. We know that. PJ Tucker's going to get 5 points and go, yeah, I have 5 points. Max Strus is a shooter. Gabe Vincent is a shooter. The only other guy you can make that argument for is Victor Oladipo. Yep. But again, the sample size is so small. His playing time can be so limited, and you don't know. The one thing that Victor Oladipo, I put this way, Jimmy Butler, consistent shot creator. Tyler Hero, consistent shot creator. Victor Oladipo waffles. There are Oladipo games, and then there are times you're just not sure he's out there because he's still working back from quadriceps surgery. So that's what makes Tyler so important. He's the other guy when Boston is playing the best of Boston defense that he can give you something just like Jimmy does. Tyler, if there was not for Tyler Hero's first half last night, Clay, I don't think the Heat would have been able to have that third quarter or possibly even pull out the victory.
Dougie Fresh asks, what do the Heat do next? And we're going to talk about adjustments coming up in just a little bit. As a matter of fact, I think we probably get to that coming up right here now. Let's wait until the next segment to talk about adjustments. But just kind of like a preview of that, assuming that they go back to Marcus Smart, right? Mm-hmm. And it was obvious that they were targeting Peyton Pritchard. And, you know, it's funny, at one point, ESPN put up the graphic of how many points Peyton Pritchard had in the fourth quarter. I was like, really? That's what's important right now? Not
right.
The fact that the Heat are absolutely targeting
revolving
him.
Door, yeah.
Right. So if the Heat – let's assume that Marcus Smart is back in this lineup, and this kind of gets to the adjustments part that we're going to talk about. What's next? What did you see out there that you thought, okay, this could also work for the Heat consistently? You're talking about the shot creation, but what is the thing that you think they can do that can get them a win if they're not targeting someone like they were Pritchard?
Well, number one, and we saw it in the second half, you've got to make three-point shots in today's NBA. I mean, look at the Sixers series. The team shot better three-pointers won the game. That's what it was. Even the Hawks series to a degree also. That's how the Heat are built. Again, let's look at their starting lineup. Two of the guys only shoot three-pointers. Matter of fact, with Gabe Vincent, three of the guys, their primary offense, okay, for P.J. Tucker, from Max Strus and Gabe Vincent, you would agree, is three-point shooting. That's yep. what they do. Tyler Hero off the bench to a degree, Victor Oladipo off the bench to a degree, and when he's feeling it, Dwayne Dedman off the bench to a degree from three also. They have to make three-pointers. It is as simple as a make-or-miss league when you play against teams that pack the paint, that are not going to let you get to the rim, that are going to build a wall, sort of, like Boston does, not to the degree of Milwaukee. So to me, that number one is more than anything. But a number two, and a close number two, is play it in the mud defensively. So if the Heat don't score 108 points and don't get over 100, look, I almost thought last night's game was higher scoring than I thought Heat-Celtics would be anyway.
I agree.
And when you add in the defense of Al Horford and you add in the defense of Marcus Smart, it might come down that way. The Celtics can add in two more defenders. Kyle Lowry, yeah, he's sort of a defender. He's smart, but he's not the defensive impact of those two. So I think the Heat still have to keep the Celtics down. Basically, what we saw yesterday, let Jaylen Brown get his, try to contain Jason Tatum. There's not really a lot of consistent or committed offense from Boston also. So I would say what the Heat need to do to win in a Marcus Smart Al Horford game, make your threes and defend like you did in that third quarter and your best defensive sequences last night.
The three-point shooting is what I keep coming back to, Ira. And it was something I thought about before the series that I didn't think was getting enough play. And I think it's something that will ultimately swing this series in the Heat's favor. And you look back last night, the Heat were 33%. Boston was 32.4. So it's not like the Heat out. As a matter of fact, Ira, to your point about the scoring in this game, I thought the amount of points was not reflective of the level of defense that was yes. getting played. I thought the shot making last night was insane, even in the half court. And I mean, there were some shots. Jason Tatum and yes. Jaylen Brown were making some contested threes that, like, you know what? You tip your cap and you move on. I thought, especially in the second half, and obviously the score reflected this, the quality of shot that the Heat got was significantly better than what Boston got. Boston just knocked down some wild ones. And credit to them, the Heat did make some tough ones too. That one where Jimmy Butler was in the corner with the shot clock winding right. down, toe on the three-point line. So to me, Ira, the thing that coming into this series that I thought people glossed over a little too much, but with how each team plays defense is going to be incredibly important. During these playoffs, the Heat have been just mysteriously bad from three-point range, 32%, right? And during the regular season, they're the best three-point shooting team at 38%. 6% difference is huge in yes. the playoffs when you're talking about one possession.
Especially when you're multiplying by three, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Flip that to the Celtics. The Celtics during the regular season, I want to say they were like 35.5%, something like that, 35, whatever it is. They've been 38% in the playoffs. So they have been better. And especially against Milwaukee, a team that kind of lets you shoot three-pointers. And so you kind of understand why they were able to shoot a better. And that was why they won game seven, because they basically said, Grant Williams isn't going to beat us from three. Oh, wait, okay, yeah, he did. We're moving on. So I think with the way these teams play defense, if there is a regression to the mean for Boston, and if there is a progression to the mean for Miami, where they shoot, it should not, it's going to be a good series, a very good series. It could be a close series. But even with Marcus Smart back, even with Al Horford back, I think the Heat shooting, if it gets back to what it should be, yes. and if Boston shooting slips back to what it should be, given how the Heat play defense, I have a hard time seeing the Heat getting outshot from three-point range over the course of a seven-game
And again,
series.
You see, to me, and I don't care about outshot. I don't care what the other team shoots. They'll do what they do because they might be shooting three-pointers and not even trying to get to the paint, not trying to get to the foul line. The Heat needs to be in that at least 35% range and preferably something closer to 37. Other team, whatever. A lot of times we compare what we think are apples to apples, but they're in different ends of the court. Like when you compare two teams' offensive rebounds. No, it's not the yeah. same battle. My battle for my offensive rebound is not your battle for your offensive rebound. Same thing on threes. If the Heat get their shooting percentage to where they want and the other team outshoots them, fine. Because then maybe the other team isn't getting in the paint at all. Maybe the other team isn't getting to the foul line. Maybe the other team is working the ball so hard to get those shots, they're also committing turnovers, so we're going the other way, or long rebounds, so the Heat are playing in transition. So again, I think it's more about the Heat's three-point shooting than the other team's three-point shooting. Look, that the Bucks rode that to a championship last season.
Sure,
They shoot their threes, and you can do whatever the hell you want from beyond the arc. You just need the diversity of offense. Bam Adebayo is going to score inside. Jimmy Butler is going to score at the foul line. Victor Oladipo and Tyler Hero will attack and get into the paint. But you have to balance that with the spacing, because if you're not hitting, the defense compacted. So where instead of reaching and fouling on Jimmy Butler, they just can build that wall and they're just going to be in his way. Got to make the threes. Max Strus came up big last night. Gabe Vincent came up big last night. And they need more of that. But because defense matters also, that's why you again did not see Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen, guys. I mean,
but they'll keep asking.
They'll keep asking, and you understand it. Look, I mean, especially in the Philly series, when maybe there were some points where you started to get a little concerned about the offense going sideways. But I think Eric Spoelstra has made it very clear that with this core, this group, you can't have one player that the other team can target. And look, Max Strus, maybe I think a little bit more highly of him defensively than you. I think I would argue he's a plus defender. And I don't think, like, he's above average from what I've seen. And maybe that's it. Like, is he the number five defender on the floor for the Heat most of the time? Yeah, yes. But I think it's because you've gone from having somebody who was on a scale of 1 to 10.
That's what I wanted to mention.
Yes. Yeah, a zero in Duncan Robinson.
No, I was going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, because I'm not as mean as Clay Ferraro. You're an awful person. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, I would say Max is a 5, which is sometimes all you need. I think Duncan's a 2, only for this reason. Because the Heat stress team defense, because it's a system defensively that he does play well.
Yeah.
Sort of reminds me of like when Eric Spoelstra always used to try to tell us James Jones is a good defender, but he still didn't play James Jones. I think it's the same thing. I think Duncan can play within the Heat defensive system, so I give him a couple of points. So I give him at least a 2. But you know what? In the playoffs, again, the little things. The difference between being a 2 and being in the middle is a 5, that can be enough when you have Bam, who's he didn't win the award, he's a 10. When you have P.J. Tucker, who's a 9. When you have Jimmy Butler, who's a 8.5. So, and even Gabe Vincent on the ball, I think we all agree, is at least a 6.5 to 7. So when you have all of that and you put your 5 in there, your average, let's do the math, I'm not, still comes out to a good number. When you put your 2 in there, it drags you maybe below that sort of Mendoza line there.
Yeah, and that's where
it's too old for you, but go ahead.
No, come on, man. Hitting 200 in baseball. Again, man, you're underestimating just how ancient I am. But with the 3-point shooting stuff, I think you need to be able to hit, because that's a big part of your game. And I think it's nice when Boston isn't. And, you know, to the point of the defense and all that moving forward, you saw late in the game last night, and this gets back to the original question. If you have a weak link defensively, especially at crunch time, the other team is going to exploit it. That is what Duncan Robinson is, unfortunately, defensively. And so that's where, in a series like this, you can't afford to give up possessions. Unfortunately for Duncan Robinson, he's going to be the odd man out. All right, coming up next, what you're hearing, Ira, on the key injuries for both Boston and Miami. We're showing the ear there. And then also, I want to get back to the idea of adjustments and what you might see from both teams coming up in Game 2. That's next, right here on Inside the Paint. Home stretch here on Inside the Paint. We're going to take you right up to 11:30. And Steven brought up a comment in the chat. He said, and he's right, he put a little clown emoji for people who try to draw conclusions for one game. And he's exactly right. And that's what Eric Spoelstra tries to tell us over and over again. And sometimes people don't want to listen. It's this series is going to take on a number of different lives. Mm-hmm. And it's going to change with a different crew of officials. It's going to change when guys come back from injury. It's going to change now that the Heat are more accustomed to the physicality that Boston is going to bring. And that Boston is more accustomed to the type of physicality that Miami is bringing on the perimeter that they didn't necessarily face from Milwaukee. Milwaukee is extremely physical inside. On the perimeter, they will give you more than Miami does. And I think that's kind of what you saw in the second half last night, where the Heat made things very tough on Boston at the three-point line. So I mentioned that this series is going to change when the guys come back from injury. What are you hearing right now? What is your feeling? And you mentioned before we got to the end of the last segment about what Ime Udoka said about Al Horford. And I want to start there. Why would he be able to come back, unless maybe this isn't a positive test, why would he be able to come back for game two for any other reason? Is there some other reason if it's not a positive test?
Yes, an inconclusive test. And we've had players who've missed a day The question is, why was he testing in the first place? Especially, it's been reported, at least reported, that he's vaccinated, which means he wouldn't be required. Now, still flu season, still colds going around. So he might have felt under the weather, felt the need to take a test. It might have come back inconclusive. Or the feeling is it's such a light strain and the load, the NBA measures load. And even if you have COVID and your load is below a certain, they call it spin ratio, that you can come back. So maybe the thought is in the interim, he can pass two tests. Because here's the deal, Clay. He played in Sunday's game, against the Bucks. The NBA has a clock where the day you test positive is day zero. You then must go 5 days before you clear their quarantine. So let's say after the game Sunday goes, you know what, we won, I don't feel too good, okay? So that's day zero he tests, which would mean Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, okay? Well, Thursday is game two. So all logical aspects of the NBA policy says he misses that. Not only that, if he practiced and was with the team either on Monday or Tuesday shoot around, because again, Ime Udoka said he didn't find out till 2 hours before he did his pregame press conference. That also would put him out of Saturday's game three. So yeah. I am a little surprised. This whole policy is a thing in the works. A bunch of people the game said yesterday, why is he testing anyway? Look, down here, the measured rate, that's not even just us testing at home, various people, is like 20% now. So it would seem one in five people could test positive if it comes from that. So I think the NBA is trying to have it both ways. They're trying to maintain vigilance on one end, but they want good playoffs. We've already seen Steve Kerr miss games during the Western Conference playoffs. We've seen Scott Foster, the lead referee, best referee in the NBA by their ratings most times, miss a game during the playoffs also. So the thought of after two compromised seasons, including everyone talking about the Heat in the bubble, folks just listening here on your podcast, those were air quotes.
Don't do the air quotes, yeah.
Is it seems like, you know, it could happen again. And again, I always digress because it's who I am. And I can't stand this crap for this reason. Are we going to go back to this now, Clay? Well, the Hawks didn't have Capella for the first couple of games in the first round. And Embiid didn't play the first couple of games in the second round. And now there's no Horford and no Marcus Smart. It's like, okay, stop it, people. This is the NBA. Magic Johnson missed the finals. Byron Scott missed the finals. This happens. This is decades going back. Dwayne Wade was injured in the playoffs. LeBron James cramped up. Players are out. You miss players. But also, Boston got to the East Finals because Chris Middleton was out, right? Mm-hmm. Boston got past the first round because Ben Simmons and Joe Harris weren't available. So you have to pull back. So my point with the Horford thing is it's very much in the air because I think the NBA's policy is sort of, we'll just go with this today. I think that's what it is.
Do you think it could be, before you move on, do you think it could be as simple as Ime Udoka just wants to create just some mystery and you know, force the Heat to still game plan, which, by the way, I think he's well within his rights to do that. But when he said that, that was my first thought was, hey, if it's an automatic 5 day clock, then he's got to be just trying to make sure that Miami has to game plan.
And I disagree with you there, Clay, and not just because Big O said we should disagree. I disagree with you for this reason. If the NBA is going to be part of gambling, and you see on all their courts, all their gambling signs, all their live sports betting, okay? And the NBA at one point wanted to be paid a transparency fee by Vegas and all the sports books so they can keep it above the line. Clay, if you watch enough sports, you're seeing now, and we're seeing it on the national broadcast, the live in-game updates about how the lines change. So if Ime Udoka knows, or the NBA know, that Al Horford can't play in game two, and they're trying to say they're all in on gambling, then they've got to be more like the NFL. They've got to have transparent injury reports. Point number two, to your point about coaches don't want other people to know, so Eric might have to game plan for Robert Williams and Grant Williams versus Al Horford, all well and good. But even in game, PJ Tucker limps off midway through the second quarter. We don't know anything until the third quarter. But as you know now, Clay, with live gambling, the line is constantly changing second by second by all these NBA partner betting sites, as is the over-under total. We've got to get to more transparency. We can't have Lisa Salters on the sideline going, still no update from the Heat. No, if you're in for gambling, you're all in. The moment PJ Tucker goes out, what is it now? What is it 5 minutes from now? What is it now? Because the NBA seems to be more than happy for you and me to be gambling during the game in real time, but without providing real-time updates. So I agree with you, Clay. That's what coaches do. They give out as little information.
Eric Spoelstra today at practice. Hey, Eric, how's Kyle Lowry doing? Eric Spoelstra. Can't really do a good Spoelstra imitation. No new update, right? That's what we're going to hear about 2 hours from now. Well, you know what? If you're in a gambling league, there is an update. Same copacetic, slight improvement, took a slight step backwards because we're all gambling. If you folks only knew how much money Clay owes to the bookmakers, but I digress, and I'll leave it at that. Okay.
Why do you think I'm doing this show?
Exactly, to make up for his losses. Shingo, when are you going to pay us? That's the Al Horford story. Marcus Smart, a midfoot sprain can be an issue. And here's the deal. This is a guy, sort of like Bam, who goes 1,000 miles an hour, who's going to dive into every pile. So all of a sudden, pins and needles, all of a sudden, that will he get up this time? Is he hurting the foot? Because you know what? Clay, I'll give you a perfect example. Last series, you remember how Danny Green got injured? Do you remember that play?
Need Hold on, sorry about that. I was trying to read the chats and muted. I mean, Joel Embiid rolls into it.
Exactly. So it can happen by the most benign accidental things if you're on the floor. That's why I cringe every time that Jimmy Butler goes down or every time that Bam Adebayo falls, because there's lots of other really big people on the floor like Robert Williams who can fall or Dwayne Dedman who can fall on top of you. So I don't think this Marcus Smart thing is just going to be he's back and he's good to go. I think it's going to be, again, pins and needles the whole way to see what we're doing and whether he can make it past it. So I think Marcus Smart stays on the injury report the balance of the series. Then you have the Kyle Lowry issue. Eric Spoelstra has told us, and I wrote about this at the Sun Sentinel at sunsentinel.com, that he is not basing any of this on where the Heat stand in the series or the other team's injury report. I don't buy that. I think Eric Spoelstra is trying to buy time until critical mass. Critical mass never arrived against the Hawks in that series with the 4-1 series. Critical mass, honestly, never arrived against the Sixers, never really in trouble in Game 6, always had Game 7 in their back pocket. So personally, and I might be wrong, and if you're listening to this podcast, time shifted, and not on Wednesday, maybe I will be wrong, I think Eric's still playing the series, and they're up 1-0, and he could buy another 2 days off for Kyle by sitting him out on Thursday. So I think he is playing the series, and I think he is playing things. If Boston says Marcus Smart is back, I think that impacts Eric Spoelstra with Kyle Lowry. Because you know what? You have to still win 3 more games in this series to get to the NBA Finals. Again, it's almost rudimentary, but for our new listeners, the old you lose your home court advantage if you lose one of the first two. Clay, it's true. If the Heat lose on Thursday, we're going to have to do the emergency pod on Friday about how it's all going to crap. So I think Eric Spoelstra knows you can't get too cute with whether Kyle plays or Kyle doesn't play.
Yeah, and I think the only reason why I would push back on the idea that you're going with how the series is going is that when they brought back Kyle Lowry in Game 3 against Philadelphia, he wasn't just below 100%. It was rough out there. It was hard to watch him play.
What percentage would you say he was at?
50.
Okay.
I mean, it was, and for this reason, Ira, it was the shooting was clearly off. He clearly didn't have the lift, but also the bigger problem I noticed was defensively. He was slow in rotations, and I mean, there are just certain things that you can't do when you've got that level of injury. And so to me, Ira, it's more about, are you better with Kyle Lowry in his current state, whatever it is, than you are with Gabe Vincent at 100%? In that starting lineup.
And that's the question I kept going to Big O on when I was on with our Accurate Pembroke Pines reports before we got here for our weekly Sloan's Home Security Inside the Paint was I kept going through the percentages. I did this with you last week also. So again, Kyle Lowry at 90%, do you play him, Clay Ferraro?
Of course.
Kyle Lowry at 80%, do you play him, Clay Ferraro?
Yes. But Woj mentioned yesterday they may bring him off the bench. Have you heard anything along those
Kyle
lines?
Kyle Lowry has not played a game off the bench in any game he's appeared in, I believe, over 800 games.
Wow.
So do you want something that dramatic and change for Kyle? He has missed games over that span, but when he has played, he has started. So again, that percentage. So you waffled at 80.
I'm going to go to
70. But well, I think if you go to 75, you're out.
Stay on 80 for a minute. Stay on 80. Okay. That's when I would play the series. To your point. That's
you
where I would look at
the series result. Right. You play if they're even or if they're up 2-0, you wouldn't play him at 80 then.
Correct. Yeah. So if Boston were to come, let's say this is the hypothetical 80% world. And so the fact that I'm getting hypothetical with 80 tells you where I'd be with 70. In the 80% world, if you lose game two and you can look back at certain points in that game and say, man, we needed him on the floor. And there's a reason why we lost. And part of that reason is that we did not have Kyle Lowry on the floor in that game. Then you're talking about the series taking on different lives as it goes on. And then you're like, okay, let's put him out there. And then maybe you steal a game three with him at 80%. And then maybe he falls back and you have to rest him for a game four and then come back in game five. So I think that's where you play the series, is when you're getting to that percentage level.
Yeah. And again, here's the thing, and I was talking to Big O about this on our Accurate Pembroke Pines report, is I felt that once you get below that 80% threshold with Kyle, you're in a good spot, because not only do you have Gabe starting, he scored a career playoff high last night, but you had Victor Oladipo then slotting into the rotation without taking someone else's spot. Victor was kind of meh. Is that a good word for last night? He was kind of just out there. He had a couple of moments, but nothing great. So if I can get a little more out of Victor, I'd feel a little more comfortable sitting Kyle. Again, like I've told folks, including going back to last week's Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint, if I'm getting less than 80% Kyle, but I'm getting a productive Victor Oladipo, I'm fine with this. If I'm not getting a fully productive Victor Oladipo, then you move things around, but then you're getting into, does Victor play? Because yes, Caleb Martin played last night as a ninth man, but minimally. He was actually in the hallway riding the bike because he had played so little during the end of the game just to stay fresh in case he had to go back in. So I think Victor Oladipo plays into the Lowry thing maybe a little bit more than we're sort of giving credit for.
Do you think that Tyler Hero would be more comfortable playing with Gabe Vincent if that's the direction they were to go? And in that case, do you think you would see less of Victor Oladipo with Kyle Lowry back in the lineup, where maybe your two guards in the next lineup would be Gabe and Tyler Hero as opposed to Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo?
Yeah, I think Victor could get shuffled out of the mix again. You know, it's like, I feel so bad for him, because every time you speak to Vic, it's almost like, I mean, I haven't gone to a lot of Sunday church services and those great sermons and gospel sermons. As a Jewish guy, you don't do that. But the way Vic talks, I always almost hear him as a preacher. He is so optimistic. He is so effusive. He gives life to the room. I put it that way, Clay.
Yeah.
And I'd almost feel bad if there's a step back and I have to do the interview. Vic, you didn't play last night. How do you feel right now? Like, I don't want that moment, because the man infuses life into the room when he's out there. But yeah, I could see that. If Kyle Lowry comes back, Victor Oladipo would be in jeopardy of losing playing time, maybe all of his playing time, because I don't think any right-minded person who follows the Heat could say right now, just go without Gabe Vincent. Initially, I did think if Kyle was there and Tyler Hero was there, that Vic is my third guard in that situation. I don't think he can move past Gabe Vincent. It's so interesting. Every opponent's mentioned him. And I think as you and I, well, actually, it was after we did our show, when the Heat put out a GIF after last series of onward to the next series, they left out Gabe Vincent. And no less than Trae Young said, hey, don't forget about Gabe Vincent in there also. He should be in there. People are noticing. And when the Trae Youngs notice, and when the 76ers guards and Tyrese Maxey notice, look, mama, I've made it. And Gabe Vincent really has.
What I thought was fascinating about that was, you remember that Gabe was guarding Trae Young a lot in that first series. And I remember maybe it was game two where there was a comment from Trae Young, oh, if the refs are going to keep letting him play like that, then there's nothing we can do. And Gabe kind of, somebody asked Gabe about that comment, and Gabe kind of smiled and said, oh, we've got to get plenty of foul calls tonight. And it was like, all right then. And for Trae to come back and say, it just shows the level of respect that they have. Last 3 minutes, Ira, what type of adjustments do you think we can see maybe on both ends? And obviously we're going to see this series shift as guys come back into the lineup. But specifically after what we saw last night, even with the guys that are going to be on the floor again, what type of adjustments could you see from both Boston and Miami in game two?
You know what? I know it sounds weird, but I have to see who's playing. The adjustments might be in the rosters. The adjustments might be in the rotation. The Boston Celtics with Marcus Smart and Al Horford are a different team than we saw Tuesday night at FTX Arena. The Miami Heat with Kyle Lowry is a different team than we saw. A limping PJ Butler, who played through on adrenaline at the end on Tuesday, but comes in today and goes, I can't move, is a different player than who we saw on Tuesday. So the biggest adjustment to me
are the injury reports, are those hourly NBA injury reports that should start today at about 1:30 and will roll right through the night. That tells us. We also know teams, like you said, don't tell us a lot. So tomorrow's injury reports will say a lot. I don't think there are. By the way, I appreciate you getting on this real quick there, Sean. Exactly. This is the photo that the Heat ran. They're on to the next round. And no less than, as we see there, Trae Young saying, hey, Gabe Vincent belongs in there also. And he does. And it's interesting. So when you talk to me about adjustments and what we're going to see, you're not taking Gabe out of the mix, even if Kyle comes back. That's an adjustment. Who's the odd man out? Is it Caleb? Could it be Gabe? This is constantly going to evolve until we get steady rosters and steady injury reports. Clay, I could tell you this. If every Heat player played on Tuesday and every Celtics player played on Tuesday, I would talk to you about adjustments because X, Y, and Z player have to do A, B, and C. But that's not how the series is going to play out. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be absences. And again, elephant in room. Al Horford protocols. Al Horford practiced, traveled, spent time with teammates. Who's next? And again, I hope not. And not because I care if the Heat win or lose the series. That's not my job. Because I don't want to hear this BS and have to deal with it. Well, they didn't have Smart and they didn't have Horford. And tomorrow we find out they don't have Williams and they don't have Williams. And it just changes things. I want everyone to be out there. When players say that, that's not bombast. They want to beat the best. They know how much it means. So to me, adjustments, it's all on the injury report. Clay and I have already discussed. He's going to check through the middle of the night on the even hours. He has 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m., and I have the odd hours. So follow our Twitter account. We'll keep you
it's
updated.
Like we have a baby that needs feeding during the night.
Exactly. Feed the injury report. Feed the injury report.
The old show, My Two Dads, my two injury report monitors as the night goes on. This has been great. You guys have been awesome. I'm really curious as well, Ira, because it's to me, it's not just the guys who are in and out of the lineup. You can't, if you're Boston, look at what happened in the fourth quarter of that game and say, yeah, you know what? We're going to be okay. We think Marcus Smart being out there is going to be the difference between Jimmy Butler taking over the game and Jimmy Butler not.
That was superfluous. That game was decided in the third. I don't care what Peyton Pritchard's doing at the end. That third quarter is what they have to overcome. And you know what? If they get seduced by the fourth quarter, hey, the Heat are going all the better because that was not best of the Heat by any means in the fourth quarter.
Great stuff. We'll be back next week, guys, right here on Inside the Paint. The Big O Show rolls on next.